My name is Janet Grant, and I'm on the teaching staff here this week as the village philosopher, which doesn't mean I took a lot of philosophy, it just means that I try to catch the pulse of the village. Plus, I'm also trying to help out with some sessions. My background is in educational psychology, and I have a particular interest in transitions, and I'll tell you why in a few minutes. But before we get too far in it, I want to play a song for you. So, let's start with a little music. If you can't hear it, let me know.
Walk down that lonesome road all by yourself. Don't turn your head back over your shoulder and only stop to rest yourself.
Contemporary, I guess, from the 70s. But I find that as a real helpful song lots of times, even though it's kind of sad. But it tells me that it's a long, lonesome road that we all have to travel. And that's what life is, as far as I'm concerned. I have a particular interest in this area of transition and for a very selfish reason. I'm in the middle of one. This summer, as I was thinking about what would I do when I came to Holden Village for sessions, and I thought, well, what do I know more about right now than transitions? Because I have made some decisions to quit a job earlier in the summer and to travel most of the summer and take a year to find out what I want to do next. But it's not just this transition that makes me interested in it. It seems like my life has been one series of transitions. And every 3 or 4 years I find myself in this pickle that I have to figure out again what's going on, what is it that I want to be doing, what's important to me, where do I want to live, who do I want to be by, all those sorts of things. That's been kind of the story of my life. I'm 36 and I've had some real good jobs, but I've only been in a place 4 years at the longest. So that shows you a little bit of lots of changes. That's not to say that if you haven't been in a place for 10 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, doesn't mean you haven't had transitions. I'm sure you all have experienced lots of transitions in your life. This topic is particularly significant to this place, to Holden Village. I had the opportunity to live here for 3 years in the early 80s, and I knew what transition was very deeply, because every day there's a transition here. The bus goes down the hill, and often it takes someone special, and often the bus coming up brings someone new, and you never know who's going to get off that bus. Things are constantly changing here. The very beginnings of this place, historically, imply transition. This was a mining town. It was meant to be a mining village. But back in the 50s, it changed. And it changed into this wonderful retreat center that has hosted thousands of people from all over the world. I'd like you to take just a second now and turn to a couple of people real near you and share your names if you don't know each other's names. Maybe that will give you the hint to try to meet somebody different. And tell them why you came to this session in particular. Just take a minute or two to do that. The title of this session is called Transitions, Making Sense of Life's Changes. I'd like to say I made that up, but I didn't. I stole the title from a book by the very same name. I figure plagiarism is the highest form of compliment, as long as you give the credit to where credit is due. I have found this to be a marvelous book, a little book. It's very simple to read. Mine is practically all highlighted because it just means so much to me. I've read it twice this summer. I barely ever read a book twice. And I'm going to outline today basically what it says, but I would commend it to you because it is such a simple yet very true form that he talks about. It's by a man named William Bridges, of all things. Mr. Bridges writing about transitions. Great name. In the book, in the very beginning, he quotes the quote I have on the board here. I realized I didn't write very clearly, so I'll read it to you. Change is avalanching upon our heads, and most people are grotesquely unprepared to cope with it. Alan Toffler wrote that in 1970. Unfortunately, almost 20 years later, I think it's still true. Maybe that will never change, I don't know. The purpose of this book, and then the purpose of today, is to identify how a person develops a chronology of development, and then also to underline a process that we all go through when we're making a transition, no matter what it is. And he views transition as a natural process. There's nothing very weird about it, that it's something we all do and it's a natural thing. One of the things about this book is that it's so validating of my personal experience. I think that's why I read it twice. I felt good when I read, felt like I was doing some of the right things. He indicates some rules about transitions that I'm going to talk about a little bit. When you're in transition, you find yourself coming back in new ways to old activities. He's saying that we all have a pattern about how we move into transition, and that there's not really any new news if we know ourselves a little bit. The other part of transition is every transition begins with an ending. That makes sense, but how many of us have ever kind of said that in words? It's an ending where that's an inward ending and an outward ending, where we have to let go of something. And I want you to now, I brought some scratch paper and some pens. I'm going to ask you to do some things along the way. And don't worry, you don't have to pass these in. No grading on this one. If you don't have something you want to write in, help yourself to that scratch paper. You might want to take 2 or 3 sheets. I have some pens here, not a whole lot, but I will pass these around. If we could get these back, that would be great. In fact, please do. Whoa! Oh. Sorry. That'll give you a project to do. You can quit. quickly pass that paper around, and I want to ask you to do one thing quickly. Remembering that each transition begins with an ending. On your sheet of paper, hold it the long way and make a line across the middle of it. It's kind of like a lifeline. How many people have ever done a lifeline? Some of you. Well, you're getting good at that. Here's some tape. Thanks. Sorry about that. We've used those pens so many times the box is wearing out. How are we doing on that paper there?
Anyone else?
How are we doing? Draw a line across the middle of your paper. At the beginning, at the left-hand side of your line, I want to put the year of your birth. And then on the right side, 1988. Any extra pens? Why don't you go knock on the Tate Ministry door and maybe somebody will help. Okay, draw the line and write the dates on that line. That's a continuum of your lifetime. I want you to write in the date and underneath it, below the line, I want you to write the earliest ending in your life that you can remember. The earliest ending. It could be a death that you experienced, you moved, your parents made a change in your life somehow, divorce, the earliest ending, a pet died, the earliest ending you can remember. And then above the line, I want you to write any feeling you can remember that you had about that. Any feeling, sadness or gladness or angry or... And once, I want you then to go out, extend it on, and put other endings in your life that you can remember, and do the same. Indicate below the line the event, the end of high school, the end of college, the end of a relationship.
Do we need years with this?
If you, or about, or an age. You can put your age. You know, don't worry about exactness. And above it, any feelings you can recall. I'm gonna cut you off more often than not. Is there anything that you'd like to say to the large group about endings that you talked about together? Any observations about endings?
I think each one affects the different emotions in a different way.
Different feelings, different emotions.
Endings are beginnings.
Endings are beginnings. Oh boy, are you crazy. Leading right into what I'm going to say.
New challenges.
New challenges. I heard somebody over here say they were always positive.
Mixed feelings.
Mixed feelings.
Apprehension.
Apprehension for you.
Hopeful.
Hopeful.
Sad.
Sadness.
Anxiety.
Anxiety.
Fearful.
Fearful?
Relief.
Relief.
Joy.
Joy.
Homesick.
Homesick.
Anticipation.
Anticipation.
Frustrated.
Frustrated. From what?
From high school, then into out in the big world. Frustration.
Okay. Interesting the gamut of feelings people have, and you probably all realize we've had those same feelings, maybe with this one, with more than one transition or within one transition, that sort of thing. I'm going to move on. Somebody said anxiety, some more negative kinds of feelings. That kind of leads into the third rule of transitions, that We will resist them because they're difficult. We'll do our darndest to stay out of it, or not face it, or not look at how we're feeling, or not face the people we need to, because it's not fun. It's confusing. And then the fourth rule, which I put squiggly lines around, because this is what the book is all about. If you don't want to buy the book or read the book, this is it, right here. Every transition first has an ending. Secondly, it has an empty or fallow time, which Bridges calls the neutral zone. I call it the time of chaos. And thirdly, there's a new beginning. I think one of the things that made me so excited about this concept was I see Holy Week here. Movement from Good Friday to Easter. And that validated my experience when I understood that connection. And that was important to me. So if you remember nothing else, that's it. It's not very hard, but that's what he's saying. And that's what I'm saying too. He's also saying that our adult lives are a series of these expansions and pushes and pulls, and that there's a series of them. I think, what's your name again?
Grant.
Oh, I should remember that. That's my last name. How come I didn't remember? Was mentioning that when we were talking. I want you to look at your timeline now just for a second. And I know this might be hard, but pick out the transition or change that's been the most important one to you in your lifetime. Just look at that and think about how you reacted to it. How old were you? How did you deal with it? How did you get through it? What did you do that was a healthy thing to do, and what were some of the things you did that were not so healthy for you? And why was it so important? I'd invite anybody to answer any of those questions if you're willing to. You don't have to feel pressured to do that. If you'd like to do that in a big group.
I think the biggest transition change I had was getting married.
Yep.
Had some colleagues on that one.
If one is to look at it at all sensibly, you can't call it. I mean, I know some people say, "Well, we'll give it a try." That wasn't the thought that went into my marriage. I'm getting married. I'm going to be married to this person as long as we're both alive.
Yeah.
And the other things in my life, more or less, went gradually from one to another.
Okay.
So, but there was, you would. I think one would have to say it's a pretty abrupt change.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Pretty abrupt. Okay.
The birth of the first child also is
big change.
A big change.
I came from a big family, and my husband had children when I got married, so I went right into a big family. So retirement and being alone was my biggest change in life.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
To be in a house all by myself.
Yep. Did you want to say something, Carl? Back there?
Me?
Yeah. You were just moving around.
Well, I was trying to filter out my own mind, which was the most important.
Hard to pick.
I mean, I think of my marriage, I think of ordination, and I think some of the real guilt times, but I have a hard time leaving a congregation. I think it's the biggest crybaby on earth when I leave a congregation, but I do leave it with that. It's been my own choice, pretty much, but a lot of anticipation in all areas.
So it's hard to pick. You had a lot of important changes.
Move around.
thank you for sharing that. Bridget suggested that there are ways of finding meaning and change, and it sounds like many of you suggested challenge, positiveness, growth, those sorts of things. You probably know some of these hints, but he suggests these 10 things to help a change be more positive, to help you get through it. One of the things he says is to take your time with it, not to push it, to allow it to be a little patient. He also suggests that we arrange temporary structures around us to help us get through that. Maybe we need to get some help with childcare to get through a particular change if we're moving from one part of the country to another, to get someone to help us with the kids. Maybe we need to build some sort of structure where we ahead of time have saved up enough money so we can take off 2 months before the next job starts. Those sorts of build temporary things that will help you get through the change. He also suggests that we not act for the sake of action, not to make a decision just because you think you ought to decide or somebody else thinks you ought to decide, but to act in its own good time when it is right. He suggests that we recognize why we are uncomfortable, to stop and realize we are uncomfortable, this is a hard time. What is it that's causing that? Maybe it's more than what we think it might be. Maybe there are pressures on us that are adding to the transition, especially birth of a first child, that sort of thing. Maybe that's obvious, but maybe there are other things that are pushing into that from work or from other family members or that sort of thing. Take care of yourself in small ways. For me, that means once in a while buying myself a flower, putting it on the table, having nice things around that says I'm worth taking care of right now. Just little things. Knowing how to take care of yourself in little ways so that you can make it through those days. Considering the other side of the change. In other words, think about how it would be if that hadn't happened. Say it's a change in a job. Consider what it would be like if you had decided to stay there. For me, in my situation right now, I decided to leave a job that I liked very much and had been there 4 years. But I decided to leave at a time when I still loved it rather than turning to hating it in another year or two or three. And I think back and I think, boy, I don't really want to be there this year. And so that's helpful to me to know that I've made the right decision or to think about what it could be like on the other side of the decision. Talk to someone. I have a friend in Minneapolis. Her name is Betty Olson. She's not the Betty Olson that's here. They often get mixed up. Betty runs a career center in Minneapolis. And she has a thing that she asks her clients to do, and that's to get a goal partner. One other person who knows what you want to be doing or what your goals are. And maybe it's not as formalized as that for you. Maybe it's a spouse or a neighbor or a sister or your pastor or someone, but find someone some other person that knows what you want, because then you're accountable to them. And Betty uses the phrase, find someone who can be tough and tender with you. And I think that's really a good phrase. Someone who will push you to change and grow, but will also realize your limits and know when you need a hug or know when you need to be left alone or whatever it is. Tough and tender. Someone that will be tough and tender with you. Discover what are you waiting for? Really do that hard thinking about what is next to find out what it is. That's the hard question for many of us. And then use this change for new learning. Use it as an opportunity. And just to realize that the change has a characteristic shape, that there's going to be something out there that's a new lifestyle for you, a new job, a new family form, a new house that you're going to be living in, a new part of the country, whatever. I'm going to talk briefly about each one of the aspects of change, of transition, ending, neutral zone, and new beginnings. And I'm going to go through this real quickly because I've got a lot of stuff to cover here. One of the things that Bridget suggests is that in our culture, we don't really have a structure like rites of passage that are used in many tribal cultures, where a young person is sent out to find out who they are, find out what their vocation is, to grow up. And there, in many cultures, there are rituals that young people go through so that when they come back to their community, they know their position within the community. We don't have that sort of thing, a rite of passage generally. The closest thing I can think of it in the church is communion or first baptism first communion. And I know as a kid, for me, I really looked forward to my confirmation and my first communion. That was something I felt like was a step into, I didn't use these words when I was 12 and 13 years old, but it was a step in my spiritual growth. I was beginning to be spiritually grown up. I can remember feeling that way. I didn't think that, but I felt that way. There are four aspects for a natural ending, and they're up here on this pole here. The four disses, D-I-S-s. The first one is disengagement, and I think of Christ going into the wilderness, separating himself from his community to take time out. Another example in our experience could be divorce or moving or illness or job changes, moving away from the familiar. For me, I've moved away from an office where I knew where all the pencils were and the Xerox machine and the envelopes and everything. You know, that's kind of helter-skelter. You know, I need a Xerox machine, so I have to go down the block to find it. It's not just in the next room, in the office building. Things are no longer familiar. This is a time when the reality is all will turn out for the best, but we probably don't want to hear that. Probably a pain if somebody, I know one time, at one point in my life, I had broken up in a relationship with this man I was going with, and I was real upset about it, and my mother kept saying, it all will work out for the best. It will all will work out for the best. And I didn't want to hear that at that time. I just wanted to kind of be in this change. And I knew she was right, but I didn't want to hear it at that point. That's a good thing to remember if you're with someone who is in a change, is to really judge when it is to say that to them. Disidentification is the next aspect of a natural ending. And this is a time when we don't actually kind of know who we are. Maybe a spouse has died, and we've related to that person for years and years as a spouse, and now we're not quite so sure who we are. We're confused, we're grief-stricken, and it's a very confusing time. This is often very difficult, even if it's not as hard of a situation as a death. It's important, Bridges in his book uses his own life as an example in this situation. His daughter, in one transition in his life, asked him, well, what do you do, Daddy? And he, at that point, was unemployed by choice. And he couldn't say, well, I'm a teacher, or I'm a pastor, or I'm a fireman. But he said he found it helpful to use ing words rather than nouns to say, I do gardening, I do reading, I do lecturing. It was more helpful for him to use the ing forms of words rather than thinking of himself as a noun, a something. Maybe that's helpful, would be helpful to you. Oftentimes our old old identity stands in the way of transition because we want to grasp onto it. It's familiar. It's who we've been, and it's hard to give that up. So it's often hard, makes it hard to move into the next step. The third aspect is disenchantment. And this is when you realize that the old reality is no longer there. I'm no longer a couple because I've divorced or because my spouse has died. I'm no longer some other reality. I'm no longer a teacher because I left that job. And that old reality is gone. Some of the suggestions that Bridges makes is that this is a time when you might be disenchanted if it was a divorce situation. My spouse no longer loves me. Something you held true, something you knew was reality, and you're disenchanted because that's not real anymore. Or maybe it's something like, my God is not just. You held on strongly onto that God was a just God, and you find something in your life or in the world around you that just doesn't make sense. Or maybe it's as simply as Santa Claus exists, and that's gone. Or, my parents don't lie or make mistakes. There was a lady here last week telling about when her kids finally realized that she could make a mistake. And that can be a disenchanting thing. Could be a mini transition for someone, or even a big transition for a child. This is kind of a difficult concept to deal with because most of the time when we think of growth or development, we think of gains. And this is talking about losses, that our development depends on a loss here. The movement into our transition is depending upon losing some old realities. And it's important at this point in the stage of the game that we realize that the old reality was significant, and it was sufficient for another time, and that's okay, but it's not significant or sufficient for this time, that we're moving into something new, a new time. The fourth aspect is disorientation, and this is a real important time, an important thing, but it's really confusing and it's not much fun. Kind of the hard part of what we were talking about, because we're disoriented, we're confused about life, we don't know really what is right, and maybe it's empty. And that is the clue that moves us into the next step of the neutral zone, the emptiness, the fallow time, the time of chaos. It's important to remember that endings are dyings, and that they should be treated, no matter what they are, as if there's been a death. Whether it's a loss of a friend through death or moving, or just a change in the relationship, or if it's a loss of a pet, or loss of a home through a fire, whatever those things are, it's a dying, it's a death. In the neutral zone, that's a time when a person is bereft of old connections and is stripped of old realities. I no longer have an office. I no longer have a work phone number. I no longer have an identity as a program director, which was my title for 4 years. I'm bereft of some of those things. It's important to do the neutral zone. It's likened to crossing a street. You're probably not going to hang around in the middle of the street too long. You want to, your goal is to get across the street. You're not going to hang around in the middle of traffic. But it's important to make the steps towards crossing the street. It's also important during the neutral zone to find time to be alone. And Bridges suggests it's a time to think. But it's likely if you talk to someone who's in the neutral zone or the time of chaos, they'll say, well, I haven't been doing much. That's what I've been saying a lot this summer. Well, I don't know what I did. I didn't even write in my journal. And I've just been kind of hanging around. But that's the time, that inactive time is a time of inner work, to slow down, to take time. There are some, I don't know if you can read this over here. These are some tools to help you get through the neutral zone. And he suggests that it's not to get out of it, the neutral zone, it's to get through the neutral zone. He says, stop struggling with it. Just surrender, admit that there's an ending, and accept it. He suggests a regular time and place of routinely being alone. Now set up a time. Maybe you are very good at your daily devotional time. Make sure that you continue to do that or develop that sort of time for you, or go for a walk every day, or find something that gives you time alone. Another tool for getting through this is to log your experiences during this time. To keep a little journal or a little notebook and just write down little phrases even, you know, so you can remember what it is that's been happening for you. To capture the happenings that have been going on, how you've been feeling about it, how your moods shift and change, what you've been thinking about, and write down some of those things that kind of puzzle you during that time. You know, why did this happen, or why did I meet this person now, or why did that guy give me his card? Just kind of keep it track of those. Emily White is here now. She just arrived today. She's going to be doing some things on dreams, and she's going to tell you even more strongly than I am to kind of keep track of what your dreams are saying. And keep notation of the decisions you make from day to day. And in a longer form, Bridges suggests that you write an autobiography. The suggestion here is that your past addresses your future. That where you've been will help you know where you're going. The paradox in all of this is that this time of nothingness is worth noting. This is a kind of a blank, empty time, but things are happening that are worth noting. Again, he's saying, take time to try to discover what you really, really want. Spend some time thinking about, if life ended, what's unlived? If life ended for you today, what's unlived? Just one little quick exercise with this on your paper. I want you to write a short obituary for yourself. If life ended today, and your life has ended today, and your college newsletter or your local newspaper needs to write up a small obit about you, what would you want it to say? What would you want it to say? Just briefly, write down a couple phrases. You know, you've got the easy part, where you were born, how many people in your family. Just think of... Or another way to think of it is write what your epitaph would be on your... Write down something important now, because I'm going to cut you off. If you haven't already. Okay. Did you find that difficult to do, or easy? Yes, difficult? I asked two questions and one, that's not fair, is it? It was difficult to do. Okay. Did most people find it difficult to do, or some found it easier? Well, the difficulty suggests to me that the next time you're in a transition, you might want to take some time to think about what it is you want said about your life. And you know how big those blurbs are. There's not much space there. So, I did an exercise the other day with some folks that took them into writing some things about what their life has been and what's been unlived and how they would like to approach the future. If you'd like to talk some more about that, let me know, and I'd be glad to do that. His final suggestion for getting through the neutral zone is to take a passage journey. He suggested, as I said earlier, that we don't have a rite of passage. Well, we could create a passage journey, and he suggests that it be in the form of a short retreat, 1, 2, 3, 5 days. Go alone, find some place where you're very comfortable, a place that's simple, a place where you can eat simple meals, not have very many worries. Don't take those books along that you always wanted to read. Don't take yesterday's newspaper that you didn't get done. Don't take the letters that you've been meaning to write since Christmas. Whatever. Don't take those little tasks, that busy work to fill up that time. Because this is time for you to think about your passage. So that there can be no distraction. You can take along a notebook if you'd like, but there's no obligation to write in it. Just to be, to take time to be during this time of the neutral zone. One of the things that you could write in a notebook if you took it along are some of those hunches that you might have, some coincidences that happen, a crazy idea that comes to mind. And just note it, because later it might make some sense to you. There might be a reason why, but don't worry about figuring out the meanings until later. The third stage is the new beginning, making a new beginning. And he says in the book that you probably have read this far because you think I'm going to tell you how to find a new beginning and how to get restarted and find something new. He says, well, wrong again. You have to do that on your own. You have to go through these stages, and that it's all very different for each person. And that the decision is always very subtle. The deciding point is always very subtle. Something that comes to you, or it's one of those hunches you had back at your passage retreat that, you know, kind of starts to make sense, and someone else that you had met had suggested that he or she would talk to you about it, or that sort of thing. He makes a point that in our culture, birth is considered more surgical than natural. That a baby is taken and then a mother is put to sleep. That's not always the case so much anymore, but that's kind of an aspect or an outlook we have. And that kind of has implications for any other kinds of renewals that we have. That it's not natural, and that we're trying to look for some psychological obstetrician to whack us on the back and get us going again. Well, we need to let it be the process and take some charge of that. The hard question is, how do you know what is the right thing to do? And what he's suggesting is that we need to make ourselves available to the opportunities. And to be available to the inner signals that happen to us, that they won't be logical necessarily, but that they will be subtle, and that they will be one of those times of ripeness that we'll know. He says that often time and money keep people from moving into a new dream. This happened to me just today. I got a postcard from my housemate back in Minneapolis, and she happened to mention in the letter, oh, by the way, the repair work on the deck cost $200. I thought, you know, here I am kind of blithely on this 2-month-long trip, and things are great, and kind of no responsibilities on my shoulders, and oh, wow, $200, where am I going to get that? So, I mean, is that going to keep me from realizing my dream? Well, it might put a little damper on some things. Who knows? He says that the litmus test for knowing that you're moving into a new beginning can come through those people around you. Maybe it's that goal partner you know. But you need to check reactions of people who know you very well. Check it out with them and say, is this real? Does this seem possible? And then the second litmus test is to look back and say, did I really make an ending? And did I really go through some time where it was just an empty time? Just to know that. And that is how you may know that it's a genuine new beginning. He suggests that once the change begins, you need to get going. You need to act. Don't just kind of, you know, everybody always talks about people who are eternal students. They keep going back to school. Well, maybe there's a point at which you need to just act and get on with it. And you need to start thinking of yourself in this new identity. I am now a single person, and I've been married for years and years, and now I'm single. And you need to start thinking in different terms. Maybe you need to use different words. In my situation, I am not an employed person right now. That's real hard to say, because most people come up, especially here, well, what do you do? Well, I have been, is how I've been responding to it. It's real hard for me to say, well, I'm not employed right now. That's kind of who I am, and I think that's pretty normal in our culture, because we are identified by what we do professionally. He also suggests that you need to take things step by step, and not to push it, but to keep going. And that the mission is just the process of moving into it, moving towards your goal. Let's see. Finally, he suggests that that this is going to happen over and over again in different ways in our lives, and that we can transfer some of these skills from one thing to another, that we need to think about making an ending. And he suggests that sometimes people fool themselves into thinking they've made an ending, and that really, he uses the example of a man who retired, and he had been a businessman, and he went into the home, and the first thing he did on his first week of retirement was he reorganized the shelves in the kitchen. Well, his wife had been the one who had been in charge of the kitchen for 30, 40, 50 years. And he thought he was helping her out by putting things more orderly. Well, she was livid. And he hadn't really ended. He took those same skills that he did at the office of organizing and planning and making things better for someone else right into the home. And he was still doing that. He hadn't made that ending. You can imagine what kind of that, what happened in that situation. So I'm just here to suggest that this is a nice little model that might help us in transitions. I know it's helping me these weeks and these months to realize it's okay to be in this fallow time. And that there are some things I can do during that time that will help me move into what is next, the new beginning. I want to suggest some other resources that are available to you. Unfortunately, this book is not in the bookstore at Holden. I had ordered it earlier in the summer, and apparently there were other people who have been in transition here this summer, and they're all sold out. There is another tape in the tape library by a woman named Sharon Kick, K-I-C-K, who talked about this same, and was she a good resource?
She was excellent.
Okay. I listened to her tape on this, and I found out you got a lot out of it, too, if you want to know some more. One book that is in the bookstore that I found helpful during my last transition a few years ago, called Under the Broom Tree, Coping with Life, Love, and God in Times of Transition. This is in the bookstore. And it's featured on the little butcher block table. This is the kind of an old faithful Richard Bowles, What Color Is Your Parachute? It's kind of the job change handbook that's been used for a number of years. It's been real popular for about 10 years. And that's also there. It's more career oriented than it's more focused on that sort of transition. Another book that's in the library that bookstore, and I couldn't find it in the library to show it to you, is a book called Life is Hello, Life is Goodbye, and deals with transitions, as well as The Road Less Traveled by Peck. And there are several books. There's a whole section in the library back in the corner called Transition if you're interested in some more things. I want to do a reading for closing. It's entitled A Parable. It doesn't tell you much about it, but I've always found this a real helpful little story. So I'd like to read it to you as we think about transitions as being an ending, a time of fallow time, and a new beginning, and thinking particularly about new beginnings. Once upon a time, twin boys were conceived in the same womb. Seconds, minutes, hours passed as the two dormant lives developed. The spark of life glowed until it fanned fire with the formation of their embryonic brains. With their simple brains came feeling, and with feeling, perception, a perception of surroundings, of each other, of self. When they perceived the life of each other and their own life, they knew that life was good, and they laughed and rejoiced. The one saying, "Lucky are we to have been conceived and to have this world," and the other chiming, "Blessed be the mother who gave us this life and each other." Each bedded and grew arms, and budded and grew arms and fingers, lean legs and stubby toes. They stretched their lungs, churned and turned in their newfound world. They explored their world, and in it found the life cord which gave them life from the precious mother's blood. So they sang, "How great is the love of the mother that she shares all she has with us." And they were pleased and satisfied with their lot. Weeks passed into months, and with the advent of each new month, they noticed a change in each other, and each began to see change in himself. "We are changing," said the one. "What can it mean?" "It means," replied the other, "that we are drawing near to birth." An unsettling chill crept over the two, and they both feared, for they knew that birth meant leaving all their world behind. It meant leaving all their world behind. Said the one, "Were it up to me, I would live here forever." "We must be born," said the other. "It has happened to all others who were here, for indeed there was evidence of life there before, as the mother had borne others." "But mightn't there be life after birth?" "How can there be life after birth?" cried the one. "Do we not shed our life cord and all the blood tissues? And have you ever talked to one that has been born? Has anyone ever re-entered the womb after birth?" "No." He fell into despair, and in his despair he moaned, "If the purpose of conception and all our growth is that it be ended in birth, then truly life is absurd." Resigned to despair, the one stabbed the darkness with his unseeing eyes, and as he clutched his precious life cord to his chest, said, "If this is so, and life is absurd, then there really can be no mother." "But there is a mother," protested the other child. "Who else gave us nourishment and our world?" "We get our nourishment and our world, and our world has always been here. And if there is a mother, where is she? Have you ever seen her? Does she ever talk to you?" "No. We invented the mother because it satisfied a need in us. It made us feel secure and happy." Thus, while one raved and despaired, the other resigned himself to birth and placed his trust in the hands of the mother. Hours ached into days, and days fell into weeks, and it came time. Both knew their birth was at hand, and both feared what they did not know. As the one was the first to be conceived, so he was the first to be born, and the other following after. They cried as they were born into the light, and coughed out fluid and gasped the dry air. And when they were sure they had been born, they opened their eyes, seeing for the first time, and found themselves cradled in the warm love of the mother. They lay open-mouthed, awestruck before that beauty and truth they could not have hoped to have known. Thank you for joining and participating, and I hope that you've had a chance to see some new resources.
Thank you.
Thank you.